Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lohan.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. On today's show, over-the-counter medications, capsules, gel tabs, coated tablets, is there a difference between them and which one is best for you?
But first, you want to keep the joints jumping and flexing and pain-free. But let's be honest, aches and pains, especially in the joints, increase as we age. As the first wave of baby boomers turn 65, they're expecting a higher quality of life than previous generations. And they don't want arthritis and joint pain to slow them down. That's why two of the most common surgeries in this age group are knee and hip replacements. Close to a million are done each year.
Joining us is Syracuse orthopedic surgeon Dr. Seth Grinke, who specializes in joint replacement surgery. Dr. Grinke is department chairman for orthopedic surgery at St. Joseph's Hospital Health Center and associate professor at SUNY Upstate Medical College. He co-founded Operation Walk Syracuse, a nonprofit that provides pro bono hip and knee replacements internationally and locally. Welcome to Take Care, Dr. Grinke.
Hi.
You know, we don't notice our joints when things are going well. But when they begin to ache, it's a game changer. Suddenly we're stiff when we get out of bed or when we stand after sitting for a while. What exactly is the function and anatomy of a joint? And what's taking place when we feel pain?
Well, each joint has its unique structure. For example, the hip is a ball and socket joint, whereas the knee is more a hinge joint. So the joints vary, but a joint consists of two parts, and each part is covered with a surface. We call it articular cartilage that has sort of a cushioning shock absorber effect to it. And as we get older, or for a multitude of different reasons, that cushion starts to get thinner and thinner and wear out. And at some point, it becomes so thin that the function of the joint is compromised, and it starts getting stiffer and sorer, not as limber as we were when we were younger. And as that occurs, that manifests itself as achiness and discomfort. And you know, the baby boomers, unlike our parents, we don't tolerate lack of activity as well. We have a mindset that we're basically going to be doing the same things at 65 as we were doing at 25.
So is joint pain inevitable as we age? And you're talking about baby boomers not really accepting the fact that they have to limit or actually discontinue what they've been doing and love. Is everyone going to eventually get joint pain?
If you live long enough. If you live long enough, eventually you're going to get some joint aches and pains. Now, whether you get it at 35 or 85, that part of that is partly genetic and partly related to whether you were a farmer or whether you were a desk-type person. So your job, your life contributes to it, but genetics also contributes to it.
So you find yourself in midlife, you realize that your parts are aging. Whether or not you were really sedentary or very active, you're at a point where you're in pain. What can a person do to prevent it from going any further than that? Are there exercises? Are there supplements? What can a person do to prevent the progression of the deterioration?
It's interesting that it's counterintuitive, because you would think that as you start to develop arthritis, what you should do is potentially back off on some of your activities. But it turns out that the fitter you are, the stronger your muscles are around each joint that's involved, the less symptomatic it is. It doesn't mean that it necessarily slows the arthritis, but you can go a lot longer than be symptom-free if you're in good shape. As far as specific exercises, impact loading exercises like jumping and running tend to be more harmful to your joints than non-impact loading like biking or elliptical or swimming. So if you have to pick an exercise, you would pick non-impact loading exercise. As far as supplements go, the evidence is weak at best. It's sort of like going to Mexico for some sort of cancer treatment that is borderline in terms of success, but you're looking for something. You want something to work. So all the supplements like chondroitin sulfate and all those different things, they're borderline successful. I would say I'd rather spend my money on like a good dinner.
All right, Dr. Grinke, then you said that it's almost counterintuitive who may develop joint issues. And you talked about the farmer versus, you know, the office worker. So if you maintain regular physical activity, chances are better that you're going to have fewer problems than someone who's sedentary for most of the day?
Absolutely. Even if you do develop arthritis, if you're exercising regularly, the odds of you having to do something for it are extended longer.
Now, you might have just explained this, but just for clarification, arthritis is what? The inflammation of the joint. So are
arthritis is an actual wearing out of the surface of the joint. Imagine that your joint is the sole of a shoe, and as you walk on it more and more, the sole all of a sudden gets a hole in it. Just by virtue of activity over a long, long period of time, that's right. What happens in your joint.
Is that something that shows up on an X-ray?
It does, yes.
Okay.
All right, I have a question. I know it's gonna upset Lorraine. I once worked in a hospital and got to see some, I guess it would be arthroscopic surgery. Is that what happens? Okay. And I saw the inside of a joint that was causing somebody pain. And the surgeon who showed me it said it's almost like looking at, like, crab meat. It's feathery.
That's true.
It's true. So that's actually, if we were to see inside of a healthy joint is smooth. And a joint that causes pain has this sort of irregular surface.
Well, that's the start of it.
Okay.
You know, the feathery, the early degeneration, the smooth surface, it becomes sort of like the crab meat feathery. And then as it gets more severe, the feathery stuff disappears and you actually see bone.
So you're bone on bone.
You actually see bone. The cartilage is gone. The bone appears underneath it.
If you're just joining us, you are listening to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. Our guest is Dr. Seth Grinke, and we're talking about joint health and what goes wrong and if it can be prevented. So let's say it deteriorates to the point where you're really in acute pain. Is that the time you go to see a medical professional?
You know, pain is so subjective, as you know. I mean, there's pain that people tolerate and pain that people don't tolerate, and everybody's tolerance is sort of different. So the bottom line is, when you start developing something that impacts your quality of life, I mean, everybody has a little bit of pain, a little bit of discomfort, some stiffness, but you deal with it until it affects something that's important for you. So for example, if you're a guy and you love to golf, you can't golf all of a sudden, that's going to make you go see somebody. If you like to walk every day, if I couldn't ski, then I would go see somebody about my problem. So it's a quality of life issue, I think even more than a pain issue most of the time.
But do you think this attitude that you're describing, that's probably more common for our generation? I mean, I look at my parents, I look at my older relatives, and they just accepted the fact that as they age, they'd slow down, they'd do less.
Exactly. You're 100% right. And, you know, there's new areas of medicine. This whole anti-aging specialty that's developing with force is all about what you're talking about. It's all about not wanting to slow down.
So if I'm in pain, here's a question. Can you do harm by ignoring the pain? Can something get worse and worse? Like you were saying, let's say you like taking walks with your dog and you notice, boy, one of your knees is really hurting. If you continue, now I'm not saying until you're limping and can't walk, but I mean, if you endure the pain, is that the worst that you're going to feel, or could you actually be doing damage that's irreversible?
You could be doing damage over time that's potentially irreversible, but it's very difficult for a person to do something really bad and keep doing it. I mean, unless you're an exceptional person, like a mixed martial artist, or, you know, like a triathlete, you know, people that, like, enjoy pain. It's hard for the normal person to go past the point of pain that really is going to damage something.
So who is a good candidate, then, for joint replacement surgery when it gets to that point?
The time to consider, first of all, you come in, you assess the degree, you certainly offer all the appropriate conservative modalities before you talk about joint replacement. But in the end, if everything's failed, and your quality of life is impacted enough that you're not happy, that you're not doing things you want to do, then that's the time you think of doing something.
What about advances in joint replacement? We hear news story. I know some of them are kind of scary, but on the other hand, I think they've come a long way, and you probably could talk to that.
It's like any field of medicine. It's incredibly impressive, even in the 20 years that I've been in practice, how many things have changed. Minimally invasive surgery, different approaches to the hip or knee, different materials that are being used. It's like any time. Every once in a while, there's something that you think is going to be great, doesn't turn out to be as great. But overall, it's much better than it was even 10 years ago. They're going to last longer. They endure more trauma. I mean, we're doing joint replacements on people in their 40s. We wouldn't even have thought of that 20 years ago.
So
the answer is, in a million ways, it's getting better.
Also, too, I'm assuming that the recovery time is much quicker for joint replacement today than 20 years ago.
I agree. It's much, much faster. For example, the hospitalization for most hip and knee replacements is 2 days.
Really?
Yeah. Like 10 years ago, it was like 6 days, and so on and so forth. And who does it and how they do it is different. In the past, there wasn't really a joint replacement specialist. It was sort of something that was just in the armamentarium of a general orthopedist. Now there's a joint replacement guy, there's a spine guy, there's a hand guy. And as each person fine-tunes his ability in a particular area, they get better at it. You can imagine somebody who does 500 versus somebody who does 5.
Okay. So when that patient goes home after 2 days, I mean, that's a very short turnaround time. Is there physical therapy? Are they walking on crutches, a cane? How quick is that recovery period?
They're initially on a walker or crutches. They usually graduate to a cane in about 2 weeks. They do need therapy. Initially, we usually arrange for it at home. After about 2 weeks, they go to outpatient therapy. And I would say the average person gets therapy 4 to 6 weeks.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. We're talking to Dr. Seth Grinke about joint replacement, arthritis, joint problems, and all of the wonderful things that make joint replacement relatively, I don't want to say quick and easy because nobody wants to suggest that it's like a drive-through procedure. But this is very different than what I remember of my older relatives having joint replacement. I mean, in the old days, I'm not saying it was a measure of last resort, but you knew that there were you'd be laid up for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's much better, but expectations have sort of also grown as the ability to make it shorter has grown. So, again, as you spoke of earlier about our parents' expectations of slowing down with age and our reverse expectations of keeping our level of activity high, people expect to get better. You know, they come in, they're like, so, like, next week, will I be able to go golfing? You know, when will I be able to start walking and riding my bike again? So, you know, there's sort of people's expectations have sort of moved with the improvements.
Well, it almost sounds like the person most likely to get joint replacement is almost self-selective in that they're active people. They don't want to be compromised. So that there's a real incentive there to recover quickly, to exercise, to move those joints, and to get better.
Yeah, I mean, there's two classes. That you just described one big, huge portion of people. And the other portion is the same people that exist in the previous generation, which is just it gets so bad, literally so bad, you are incapacitated. You're on a walker. You can barely get to the bathroom. You can't even take care of yourself in your house, or barely can. And those people are also – there's a class of those people that wait till it gets that bad before they do something.
Mm-hmm. So how many years can one reasonably expect a joint replacement will function?
I would say at 20 years, I would say right now, 85% of the joints that you put in now should still be good.
Wow.
That's pretty impressive. Because I think there was a feeling that you didn't want to do it too young because you would have
you
to go in again.
You just wanted to do it once, right?
Well, you only wanted to do
right.
it once, right?
And that's still the truth. It's not like you jump on somebody who's young. You try everything. You literally would try everything to not do it.
But let me ask you that. I'm interrupting. What would everything entail?
There's therapy. There's different medications. There's different types of injections you can put in a joint. You know, there's weight loss. There's modification of activity. And then there's things on the horizon that aren't yet practically used in humans. But, you know, someday there'll be stem cell injections and there'll be, you know, harvesting of cartilage from another portion of your body and putting it in a portion that's worn out. I mean, those aren't things that we do now, but those are things on the horizon.
So if I'm experiencing low-level joint pain and it comes and goes, it's perfectly fine for me to do over-the-counter stuff like ibuprofen. I know a lot of people start their day with
that. Absolutely. It's okay to do that, and it's okay to keep going.
Okay.
Like, it's okay to keep exercising, keep doing things until you could do it to a point where you're like, you know, wow, I'm starting to feel like maybe I can't do this. Or it hurts too much to do it. That's when you'd come in.
Dr. Grieke, it's very enlightening to hear this because sometimes people feel pain and think, uh-oh, whatever I'm doing, I better stop. And that sounds like exactly the wrong approach to take. You know, and as you had mentioned, strengthening those muscles around the joints.
Losing weight, probably, which many of
us
can do.
And losing weight. Very helpful.
It's hard to lose weight.
Yes, it is, especially as you age.
That means I got to give up Cheez-Its.
I was just going to say, it's hard to lose weight, especially when you have to eat less.
Right.
If only they could figure that one out. I know Operation Walk Syracuse, which we mentioned a little while ago, is a nonprofit that you are involved in. Why don't you tell us about that?
Operation Walk is a program that my brother and I and Kim Murray started a number of years ago, which does pro bono joints both overseas. We've gone to Nepal and we've gone to Panama and in our local area. In the local area, we find people that basically have no insurance. It's the people that make enough money that they don't qualify for Medicaid, but not enough money that they can actually afford to buy insurance for themselves. They're the people you want to help the most. Self-employed, working people that, you know, are just getting by. Once a year we do that for a weekend. We're always looking for people that need to have that done. It's only joint replacement. It's not like back surgery or other areas. And then overseas, it's sort of like if a spaceship landed in Syracuse and then people got out of the spaceship and said, anybody who has dementia, we can treat. We can cure dementia. And then they treat a certain number of people, then they get in the spaceship and leave. That's what it's like when you go to Nepal. You land in a plane and you say, anybody who has a worn-out joint, I think we can fix your joint and you can walk and have no pain again. And like 1,000 people show up. You can only do a certain proportion of them. And then you leave. It's like a magic experience, incredibly fulfilling. As it is, I might add, in just your own area where you do people that are who wouldn't want to operate on a person who's working, who's productive, but just can't afford it? So those are very, very dear to our hearts.
Right. It must be incredibly fulfilling for you.
It is. Are you kidding? It's selfish. I tell people we're doing it's just purely a selfish thing because it makes you feel so damn good. I mean, nothing makes you feel better than that.
Well, we're lucky to have you in our community, and we appreciate it. And thank you for your time today on Take Care.
Well, thanks for letting me participate.
Dr. Seth Grinke is an orthopedic surgeon at St. Joseph's Hospital Health Center in Syracuse. For more information on joint health and Operation Walk Syracuse, visit the Take Care webpage at wrvo.org.
Coming up next, the many choices consumers face when they're deciding on over-the-counter medications. Expert advice on what's best for you. You're listening to Take Care on WRVO Public Media.